Schroeder has been an award-winning journalist, writer, and editor for more than 30 years. His book editing projects include two New York Times bestsellers. As an editor of the Washington Post magazine and earlier the Miami Herald's Tropic, he conceived and edited two stories which earned Pulitzer Prizes. In addition to being an author and editor of narrative journalism, Schroeder is one of the foremost editors of humor in the country. He has edited humor columns by Dave Barry, Gene Weingarten, and Tony Kornheiser, as well as conceived and launched the internationally syndicated comic strip Cul-de-Sac by Richard Thompson. Today we'll talk to Tom about his latest book, Acid Test, LSD, Ecstasy, and the Power to Heal. A fascinating, transformative look at the therapeutic powers of psychedelic drugs, particularly in the treatment of PTSD and the past 50 years of scientific, political, and legal controversy they've ignited. Welcome, Tom, and thanks for being back with us on the Book Report.
It's a real pleasure, Elaine.
In Acid Test, you focus on three men, Rick Doblin, Michael Mithoffer, and Nicholas Blackston. Can you introduce us?
Rick Doblin was basically a hippie in the 70s, just at the tail end of the era when psychedelic drugs were still not totally banned for research, and he became very enamored with the idea that the therapy of psychedelic drugs that had been used very successfully in the 1950s and 1960s were the future of psychotherapy. Michael Mithoffer was an emergency room doctor who decided that he was sick of only sort of getting to people at the tail end of the pathology, sort of after all the things that they had wrong in their lives resulted in getting a knife in the stomach or a gunshot wound. And he decided he'd rather deal with people on the front end where they developed the bad habits that resulted in that. And also, you know, instead of just doing things to patients like sticking tubes down their throat, he wanted to have a sort of more collaborative type of relationship with them. So he became a psychiatrist. He began to work with post-traumatic stress disorder and to be really dissatisfied with the treatments that were available, which weren't all that effective and for everybody. The third person, Nicholas Blackston, was a 17-year-old kid who joined the Marines just in time for the Iraq War. And in the war, he had these horrific experiences. Every negative thing that could happen happened. And he also had to watch one of his best friends get gut shot and bleed out right in front of him when he couldn't help him. And then he got blown up himself and got physically injured. But the real serious problems were the psychic injuries. And when he got back home, he could not continue with his life. He was so severely affected by post-traumatic stress. And so he really got to the point of suicide. And just when he thought he couldn't go on any longer, he saw a notice that the study that Rick and Michael had come up with was ongoing just 20 miles from his home.
Hmm.
So the climax of the book is really when Nick goes in for his therapy.
Rick Doblin had been described as Timothy Leary for the 80s. Did he ever actually meet Timothy Leary?
Oh, yeah, he did. And he knew, in fact, he knew all the big names in sort of the psychedelic world.
I was fascinated to read that the author Ken Kesey's introduction to LSD had a CIA connection. Can you share that story?
Ended, they discovered these German research papers on using mescaline, which is a psychedelic drug, as a interrogation device. And so the Army decided, well, they didn't have any success with it, really. I mean, they were mixed reports. But the Army decided and the CIA decided, well, we're going to try this. So they basically tried to weaponize LSD with no success at all. But they had this far-flung sort of network. They even had a brothel in San Francisco where they would dose the Johns unsuspectingly with LSD and sort of watch what happened. It was horribly damaging and irresponsible. But they also funded all this research, secretly funded all the scientific research at universities. And there was a, in Menlo Park Hospital, there was a study funded by the CIA that Ken Kesey volunteered for and started taking LSD. And what he really wanted to do was, sort of ride this thing like a wave. And he instituted these things called acid tests, which is, the inspiration for the title of the book. Where all these people would get together and the Grateful Dead would play music and everybody would take LSD and just to sort of see what happened. Kesey also wrote the first, he was inspired to write One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, which is one of the great American novels, while he was under the influence.
We're speaking with Tom Schroeder on the Book Report. So is there any science behind the thinking that continual use of LSD fries your brain?
Well, I mean, I would think that while it's not probably not advisable to like be putting these down like daily vitamins, that actually a lot of research in the 50s and 60s showed that it was a remarkably safe drug considering how dramatic its psychic effects were, especially when used under the medical supervision in a clinical situation. The real danger of people using it is that they're doing it in an unscreened and sort of unsupervised way, and pre-existing mental disorders do not react well to the LSD experience or to the psychedelic experience, and some people sort of it with pre-existing problems it can sort of provoke a psychotic break. It can create acute anxiety, and in a therapeutic setting, sometimes those moments of acute anxiety under the influence are actually openings for dealing with underlying issues that result in therapeutic breakthroughs. There was just a Johns Hopkins study that used psilocybin to treat people who were heavy smokers who tried multiple times to quit and failed, and they had an 80% success rate, which is more than twice the success rate of the best-known sort of drug-assisted smoking cessation program.
Tell us about MDMA, ecstasy, and the researchers who first determined it could be used in post-traumatic stress therapy.
Well, in the early 70s, just as LSD and other psychedelics were being put on Schedule 1 with heroin and cocaine, a guy named Sasha Shulgin out in California, who was a chemist who had been very impressed by the psychedelic experience and decided that he wanted to dedicate himself to finding similar compounds. And he tested them on himself. And he had a very different kind of psychedelic experience with MDMA than he'd had with other psychedelic drugs, in that it wasn't this sort of pyrotechnic kind of experience with just all this wild sensory input. It was this extremely calm and centered experience. And he recognized that maybe this would be, he knew that, psychedelics were being used therapeutically, and he thought that this might have some special value. So he gave it to a psychiatrist friend of his who had been doing psychedelic therapy for years and was about to retire. And the guy was named Leo Zeff, and he was so impressed with the MDMA's potential that he put off his retirement and basically until he died. And he used it, and not only used it, but sort of advertised its effects, its positive effects, to therapists that he knew all over the country, and hundreds of people were using this in therapy, and they were getting tremendous results. And the advantage of the MDMA, especially for when they were using it for people with traumatic stress issues, was that it really seemed to shut down the whole fear response that drives PTSD. In PTSD, you have a traumatic experience, and you never fully process it, but it kind of lurks in your brain, and it keeps setting off the alarms, if you will.
With an average of 22 vets a day committing suicide, do you think the military will ever investigate the potential of these drugs?
There are as many as 500,000 service people that are returning from our decade of war in Iraq and Afghanistan with severe PTSD. And this is, and for most of them, there is not going to be an effective cure for this. So this is going to linger. I mean, there's still thousands and thousands of Vietnam vets who are still suffering from PTSD. And in fact, the cost of dealing with both the sort of the disability pay and the medical care that we owe our vets over the next 30 years is estimated to be in the neighborhood of $1 trillion. Because of the stigma of psychedelic drugs, because of that whole sort of cultural association with the counterculture in the 60s, the military is kind of returning somewhat of a blind eye to this, and they're certainly not funding it. They haven't spent a dime on this. And, the amount it would, for a private nonprofit like Rick Doblin runs to fund this research is incredibly hard. It costs tens of millions of dollars. But for the Pentagon, that's pocket change. It's going to take years. The most optimistic estimate before it could be a prescription treatment would be in 2021. And I think that's way overly optimistic. I think it's going to be more like 10 to 15 years. So it really makes me ill that the government and the military establishment, aren't really getting behind this and trying to move this research as quickly as possible.
Well, thank you so much, Tom. Acid test gives all of us so much to think about. Thank you for joining us today.
It was a pleasure, Elaine. Thank you.
Bye.